Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on billions for the bankers and debts for the people right after this. Well, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage, and the First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. You know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes and politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, but you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from our political process, certainly not from our politicians, lawyers, or bureaucrats. You know, old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I'd like to echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of the courts, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, it's best of all, free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about billions for the bankers and debts for the people. It was written by Sheldon Emery back in 1977. When we left off last time, we were talking about they print it and we borrow it and pay interest. That's right, the bankers create the money that you're down at your local federal deposit insured bank, and he writes up a credit deposit and they create a credit entry for you, and money is created, and you go out and spend it. Checkbook credit. So let's start with the need for money. You know, the federal government, having spent more than it has taken from its citizens in taxes, here's the way this game is played. Let's suppose that the government needs $1 billion for the sake of our illustration. And since it does not have the money and Congress has given away its authority to create this money, the government then has to go to the creators of the money, the Federal Reserve, for $1 billion. But the Federal Reserve, which is a private corporation, doesn't just give its money away, boys and girls. The bankers are willing to deliver $1 billion in money or credit to our federal government in exchange for the government's agreement to pay it back with interest. So Congress authorizes the Treasury Department to print up $1 billion in bonds. The bonds are then delivered to the Federal Reserve Bank. The Federal Reserve then pays the cost of printing the $1 billion, about $1,000, and makes the exchange. The government then uses the money to pay its obligations. What are the results of this fantastic transaction? Well, $1 billion in government bills are paid, all right, but the government has now indebted you and I to the bankers for $1 billion on which the people must pay interest. Tens of thousands of such transactions have taken place since 1913. so that by the 1980s, the U.S. government is indebted to the bankers for well over $1 trillion, on which the people are paying $100 billion a year in interest alone, with no hope of ever paying off this principal. Supposedly, our children and following generations are going to pay this off, but I suspect that they're going to be paying forever and ever. And these bankers, by the way, don't have any year of release or jubilee year. Now, that's biblical. That's archaic. We can't have things like that. But we can have usury and interest, which is prohibited by the scripture. Hey, but there's more. Now, you may say, well, this is terrible. This is insane. This doesn't make any sense. Well, yeah, that's true. But we've shown only a part of this sordid story. Under this unholy system, those United States bonds have now become assets of the banks in the Federal Reserve System, which they then can take and use as reserves to create even more credit to lend. Current reserve requirements allow them to use that $1 billion in bonds to create as much as $15 billion in new credit, to lend to the states and municipalities, to individuals and businesses. Added to the original $1 billion, they could have $16 billion of created credit out in loans paying them interest, with their only cost being $1,000 for printing the original $1 billion in bonds for that loan to the government, remember? Now, since the U.S. Congress has not issued constitutional money since 1863, that's more than 100 years, in order for the people to have money to carry on trade and commerce, they're forced to borrow this created credit of the monopoly bankers and pay them usury and interest. But that's not all. There's still more. In addition to the vast wealth drawn to them through this almost unlimited usury, the bankers who control the money at the top are able to approve or disapprove large loans to large and successful corporations to the extent that refusal of a loan will bring about a reduction in the price that that corporation's stock sells for on the open market, the stock exchange. So after depressing the price of these corporations, the bankers' agents then buy large blocks of this stock, after which the sometimes multi-million dollar loan is then approved, which then the stock rises and then is sold by the bankers for a neat profit. In this manner, billions of dollars are made with which to buy more stock. This practice is so refined today that the Federal Reserve Board need only announce to the newspapers an increase or decrease in their rediscount rate to send stocks up and down as they wish. This is stock market manipulation at its best. Using this method since 1913, the bankers and their agents have purchased secret or open control of almost every large corporation in America. Using that control of corporate America, they then force the corporations to borrow huge sums from their banks so that corporation earnings are siphoned off in the form of interest to the banks. This leaves little as actual profits, which can be paid as dividends, and explains why stock prices are so depressed, and while the banks reap billions in interest from corporate loans, in effect, the bankers get almost all of the profit, while individual stockholders are left holding the bag. Isn't that just special? Now, the millions of working families of America are now indebted to the few thousand banking families for twice the assessed value of the entire United States with all of its infrastructure and all of its assets. And these banking families obtained that debt against us for the cost of the paper, the ink, and the bookkeeping. Isn't that just real neat? Now, the interest amount is never created at the time that the loan is created, and the only way that new money, which is not true money but is credit representing a debt, goes into circulation in America is when it's borrowed from the bankers. So when the state and the people borrow large sums, we seem to prosper. However, the bankers create only the amount of the principal of each loan, never the extra amount needed to pay the interest. Therefore, this new money never equals the new debt that's added. The amounts needed to pay the interest on loans is never created, and therefore it does not exist. Well, under this kind of system, where new debt always exceeds the new money, no matter how much or how little is borrowed, the total debt increasingly outstrips the amount of money available to pay the debt. So the people can never get out of debt. An example will show the viciousness of this usury debt credit money system with its built-in shortage of money. If $50,000 is borrowed, $263,941 must be paid back. Did you get that? Every time that somebody borrows $50,000, $263,941 has to be paid back to the banks. Here's the way that scam works. When a citizen goes to a bank to borrow $50,000 to purchase a home or a farm, the bank clerk has the borrower agree to pay back the loan plus interest at 17.5% interest for 30 years. The borrower must agree to pay $733.17 a month for a grand total of $263,941.20. Now that's the interest rate, 17.5% in 1977. Do you remember that? I can remember that. Interest rates went up to 21% before it was all over. Isn't that just special? Now, if it's 5% interest and you borrow $50,000, you have to pay $62,000 on top of the 50. So take 62 plus 50, you have to pay back $112,000. You borrow 50, you have to pay back $112,000. That's at 5% interest. At 10% interest, you have to pay back another $62,000. But it works like this. If you borrow $50,000 and at 10% interest, you have to add to it the compounding effect. You see, the compounding effect, that even adds more to it. It's a percentage of the percentage. In some cases, it can be a percentage of a percentage of a percentage, depending on whether the interest is compounded daily, weekly, monthly, or annually. Hey, these bankers, they know how to count. Now, the rest of us have all been sent to public schools. I couldn't count until I was 37, but when I learned how to count the way these bankers do, I said, oh, my God. I said, I think I need to get out of this banking system over here and make a little money for myself. Well, the clerk in the bank requires the citizen to assign to the banker the right of ownership of the property if the borrower does not make the required payments. The bank clerk then gives the borrower a $50,000 check or a $50,000 deposit slip, crediting the borrower's checking account with $50,000. The borrower then writes checks to the builder, subcontractors, and so on, who in turn write checks. $50,000 of new checkbook money is thereby added to money in circulation. Now, do you see where inflation creeps in? They just create this money right out of thin air. There's no corresponding houses or cars or goods or services out there. We just create it. And that money goes out there to bid up the prices. Today we call that inflation, of course. However, this is the fatal flaw in the usury system. The only new money created and put into circulation is the amount of the loan. That's the $50,000. The money to pay the interest hasn't been created. See that? There's no money to pay the interest. And therefore, it was not added to the money in circulation. So, this borrower and those who follow him in ownership of the property must earn and take out of circulation $263,941, over $200,000 more than he put into circulation when he borrowed the original $50,000. And by the way, it is this interest which cheats all families out of nicer homes. It's not that they can't afford them. It's because the banker's usury system forces them to pay for five homes to get one. Or if it's down to 5%, and here it is, as I speak, in the year 2005, interest rates are 5% headed to 6%. They're right at 6%, I saw the other day. So if you take 6% interest on a $50,000 loan, it's $62,000 over the course of the loan, 30 years. So you buy one house for you and one for the banker. Well, I pointed out to you in a program or two a week or two ago that if you were to build that house yourself, that $50,000 house, the labor and material is $25,000. $25,000 of that is profit. If you build it yourself, you could build two houses for that same $50,000. If you took the $50,000 plus the interest, you could build four houses. Hey, boys and girls, I would say that your standard of living would go up dramatically if you would stop dealing in Federal Reserve notes and stop dealing with the banks altogether. And then when you add to that the insurance and you stop dealing with the insurance companies, and then you stop dealing with the credit and the credit cards, and then you stop dealing with credit and borrowing from the associates and beneficial finance, and then you stop earning income and deal in property and get rid of that 17% income tax, and then you provide for your own old age and stop paying that 16% on Social Security, you know, boys and girls, you'd start having some money in your pockets, and you girls could go back home and play with the children and educate your kids at home instead of having to go out there and work to support the bankers. It's not that our work and productivity doesn't produce enough. It's that our work and productivity is being spent very, very poorly. Now, I don't want to get in the way of people's happiness and success. If you want to buy a house on a 30-year mortgage and buy one for you and one for the banker, you certainly have a right to do that, and you ought to be encouraged to do that. But if you want to get ahead, I would suggest that instead of buying one for you and one for the banker, that you buy four for yourself. I know it's a wild new selfish, greedy concept, but I think you'll do better that way. Now, every new loan puts the same process into operation, and every borrower adds a small sum to the total money supply. He does that when he borrows, but the payments on the loan, because of the interest, then deduct a much larger sum from the total money supply. There is therefore no way all debtors can pay off the money lenders. So as they pay the principal and interest, the money in circulation gets less and less, smaller and smaller. All they can do is struggle against each other, borrowing more and more from the moneylenders. Each generation, the moneylenders, the bankers, who produce nothing of value slowly, then more rapidly gain a death grip on the land, on the buildings, and present and future earnings of the whole working population. That's why Proverbs 22:7 has come to pass in America. The borrowers have become the servants of the lenders. No wonder God forbids interest on loans. Well, small loans do the same thing. You see, if you haven't quite grasped the impact of what we've discussed so far, let's consider a small auto loan for 3 years at a modest 18% interest. Step one. Citizen borrows $5,000 and pays it into circulation. It goes to the dealer, the factory, the miner, and so on, and signs a note agreeing to pay the banker $6,500. All right, step two. The citizen pays $180 a month of his earnings to the banker. In 3 years, he will take out of circulation $1,500 more than he put into circulation when he borrowed the $5,000 from the banker to start with. Well, every loan of banker-created money causes the same thing to happen. Since this has happened millions of times since 1913 and it continues to this day, you can see why America has gone from a prosperous, debt-free nation to a debt-ridden nation where practically every home, farm, and business is paying usury and tribute to the bankers. The usury tribute to the bankers on personal, local, state, and federal bank debts totals more than the combined earnings of 25% of the working people, and soon it'll be 50% and continuing up from there. All right, so, you know, you can just picture it for yourself. You go borrow $5,000 and the banker credits your account with $5,000 and you go out and start writing checks. But you're going to have to pay back $6,500 over 18 months. So over time, you and I and everybody else around us, as we borrow more and more money into circulation, it greases the skids and boy, does it make business pop. Then as we pay off on those loans, it takes more money out of circulation than is in circulation. This causes a shortage of money for which Alan Greenspan has to reinflate the currency. So they got to make more and more loans. Isn't that special? Now, the objective of all of this is to create a credit debt usury system in which you become the servant of the lender. So if you're in debt, you are the servant to the lender. You are working every month, and let's say you're making $2,000 a month in your driving truck or whatever you're doing. Now take out the amount of money that you're paying in interest on your mortgage payment, on your credit cards and so on, and this is the amount of money that you're taking out of your productivity, probably around 25% of everything you create and produce goes to supporting these bankers. Now, you certainly have a right to do that. I want to be the last guy. I want to emphasize that. You certainly have a right to do that. But you could increase your standard of living by 25% by just paying cash. Now, when you run out of money, you run to your boss and say, hey, I need you to give me a raise. Now, have you ever thought, gee, boss, I'd like you to pay me more money because I'm going to produce more? That's what property is all about. The reason that property and property rights work so well is that when you want more, you just go out and produce more. And then whatever you produce is yours. And, you know, if you're getting lazy today, like, I got to go out here and I got to milk my cows. Now, I got 3 cows milking. When I got 1 cow milking, I get about 3 or 4 gallons a day. 2 gallons gives me about 6 or 8 gallons. 3 cows, you know, gives me, you know, 9 to 12 gallons. So if I want more milk, I just start milking more cows. If I want less milk, because I can't consume, utilize, or drink, or sell it, then I want to milk fewer cows. But once you get into this credit debt usury thing over here, let's suppose I'm borrowing money, I have to milk more and more cows so that I can sell more and more milk to pay more and more interest and usury. And my question to you is, why do you want to work harder to support somebody else? You know, not that you shouldn't or couldn't do that. I mean, if you want to go out and work to support the National Bankers Association, well, you certainly have a right to do that, but is that good for you? Why is it that you want to put your wife to work to help you make all these payments to support all these other people? Somehow or another, that just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, there is therefore no way that all debtors can pay off the money lenders. Some of us can pay them off, but not all of us. So as they pay the principal and interest, the money in circulation begins to disappear. And all that you and I can do is struggle against each other, borrowing more and more from the money lenders. Each generation, the money lenders, the bankers, who then produce nothing of value, they slowly and then more rapidly gain a death grip over the land, the buildings, and the present and future earnings of the whole of the working population, and that's what's occurred here. The whole working population of America is working hard to stand still. There has been no real wage increase since 1973. That's 4 years before this little booklet was put out. Now, most of you people today are making, well, the median average, I shouldn't say most, but $41,000. Let's just take $41,000 and mull that one over for a minute. You're making $41,000 a year today. Well, I can remember back in 1970 through 1980, if I was making $1,000 to $1,500 a month, I was doing quite nicely. I wasn't complaining. In fact, when I left the Atlantis Company, when I retired in 1978, I was making $12,000 a year. $12,000 a year. And I paid my taxes and lived comfortably on $12,000 a year. That was $1,000 a month. Now take your $41,000 a year, divide that by 12 months, and you're making $3,400 $3,400 a month. Now, are you able to make ends meet and pay all of your bills on $3,400 a month? So you're making three times as much money, but your actual purchasing power isn't any greater. In fact, my dad back in the 50s, and I can point to a lot of my friends, you know, whose dads went out into the marketplace in 55, 56, 57, 58, long in there, and bought and paid cash for an automobile. Do you know of anybody that goes out today making $41,000 a year, the median average wage, and just plunks down cash and buys the car and drives off with it? Hell, they'd have you arrested for being a drug dealer. Why, they would report that to Homeland Security if you went in and paid cash for a car today. You know, times have changed, haven't they? So, if you haven't grasped the concept or the impact yet, you haven't learned how to count. That's what our problem is. Every loan that a banker creates, that is money or credit, causes the same thing to happen. Now, this has happened millions of times since 1913. And you can see why it is that America has gone from being a prosperous, debt-free nation until today we're a debt-ridden nation where practically every home, every farm, and every business is paying usury. That is tribute to some banker. The usury tribute to the bankers on personal, local, state, and federal debt totals more than the combined earnings of 25% of the working people. And soon it's going to be 50% and going up from there. That's why you have to have your wife out working to help you support. Now you're going to have to have more than that. You're going to have the wife and you, and then one of your children, and then your wife and you and one child, and then a second child and a third child. And that's to keep up with all the interest that you're going to be paying. Now, this is why the bankers prosper in good times and bad. In the millions of transactions that are made each year, like these that we've just illustrated, little actual currency changes hands, nor is it necessary that the money or currency change hands. And that's because 95% of all cash transactions in the United States today are done by check. So the banker is perfectly safe in creating that so-called loan by writing the check or the deposit slip. Not against any actual money, as I pointed out. If you came to me and I loaned you 100 ounces of gold, you're actually taking the money, the gold, out of my possession. But you see, the banker doesn't do that. He gives you a deposit slip. And in effect, he creates this $10,000 loan and you deposit the money in his bank. He never gives you anything. He still has full control over the loan. It gets better than that. All the bankers work together in the Federal Reserve System. The money never leaves their system. From the time you borrow it to the time you spend it, and all the people that you spend it with take it and deposit it right back into the Federal Reserve Bank. So from the time the money is created until the time the money is spent, it never leaves the credit system, the banking system. They have total control over all the money in the land. Well, all the money except the gold and silver that's in private hands being used as current money. Now, there are a few of us in the country, not very many, but a few of us that conduct our business in real money, gold and silver coin. And we buy, sell, and trade among ourselves. And from time to time, I go to Walmart or somebody else, and I convert the gold to paper that they want. And when I do that, Walmart ships that money right out of your local community. They send that off to their corporate headquarters to go spend on building buildings in China. Doesn't benefit you in the local community. You might want to tuck that one away in your hearts. And this is why the bankers prosper, whether the times are good or bad. Bankers make money, whether it's depression or boom times, doesn't make any difference to the banker. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing Billions for the Bankers and Debts for the People by Sheldon Emery, written back in 1977. It's just as poignant, just as important today as it was then. The circumstances have deteriorated dramatically. We're going into a period of hyperinflation. There's going to occur a massive transfer of wealth in America. Massive transfer of wealth. The bankers already own most everything in the country. They're going to take over a couple of more big, big assets. That is all the land in America, except that, of course, there's always going to be a little bit that the bankers aren't going to get hold of. Elijah had a complaint. He said to Big Mike, he said, I'm the last man in Israel to practice this law. And Big Mike said, oh no, there's 7,000 more that haven't bowed their knee to Baal. Now there's a few people out there that haven't bowed their knee to Baal. And as a result of that, there will be some people who hang on to some private property. There's going to be some wealth in the hands of private individuals out here outside the banking system. Not much, but a little bit. You might want to be thinking about how much of it can you save for yourself. Now, when you take a look here, there's a couple of ads that were put in the paper, a couple of news articles back in January of 1979. These are a few taken from the Arizona newspapers in 1979. Valley Bank posts 49% gain in profits. Gains of 49% in net income and 51% in operating income were posted last year by Valley National Bank. Those gains brought net income to $33 million in the year ended December 31st and operating income to $34 million the year before. Those totals were $22 million and $22 million respectively. Bank's profits rise 21%. The Arizona Bank announced on Monday it had achieved a 21.2% increase in net income in 78 over 1977. I want to point out something here, too. You know, if you're growing at 20% a year, you know, that's 20, 40, 60, 80, 100. That would double every 5 years, wouldn't it? At 20% a year. But it's better than that. You see, because let's suppose that you make $1,000. So you just plug $1,000 into your times 1.20. That's $1,200. So you got a 20% increase. Now let's go times 1.20. The second year is 1440. It doesn't go up from 10 to 12 to 14. It goes to 1440. Let's do that a third time. Times 1.20 the third time, it goes to 1728. Times 1.20 takes us to 2073 in 4 years. In other words, at 20% growth per year, you double in 4 years, not five. And that's because the interest is making interest. Called the magic of compounding. Now, the banks, the Federal Reserve, owns just about everything in the country. And that's where reality's at. Now, there's just a little bit that they don't have physical ownership of. Not much, but a little bit. Now, back in Genesis chapter 47, Joseph stored up a lot of food. And when the famine came, when this disaster struck, this pre-programmed disaster that God had warned Joseph about, said there's going to be 7 fat years and 7 lean years. Well, boys and girls, we are in those fat years right now. I don't know how much you've got stored for the lean times, but there's some lean times coming up. And the lean times caused those people back in Joseph's day to sell themselves into bond servitude. Now, in Revelation 13:16, there's coming a point in time when you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without the mark of the beast in your right hand and in your forehead. Now, when you people go broke, when this economic disaster occurs, you will line up to get that mark in your hand and in your forehead, because without it, you're not going to be able to buy, sell, or trade. Now, I'm not really sure that that mark of the beast is going to be a good thing for you. You might want to be thinking about that. See if you can't avoid that. Now, let's take a look at the cost to you. How much is this eventually going to cost you? The answer is everything. In 1910, the U.S. federal debt was about $1 billion. That was about $12.40 per person. $12.40 per person. Now, state and local debts were practically non-existent. By 1920, after only 6 years of Federal Reserve operations, the federal debt had jumped to $24 billion, or $228 per person. In 1960, the federal debt reached $284 billion, or $1,575 per person. And state and local debts are also growing. By 1981, the federal debt passed $1 trillion and was growing exponentially. That means geometrically. That means 1, 2, 4, 8, 16. As the bankers tripled the interest rate. State and local debts are now more than the federal, and with business and personal debts, they total over $6 trillion. Now, that's 3 times the value of all of the land and buildings in America. Got that? $6 trillion. Well, of course, that's in 1977 dollars. Now, if we signed over to the money lenders all of America, we would still owe them 2 more Americas plus interest. 2 more plus interest. However, these bankers are too cunning to take title to everything. They will instead leave you with some. with some illusion of ownership so that you and your children will continue to work and to pay the bankers more of your earnings on ever-increasing debts. The establishment has captured our people with their ungodly system of usury and debt as certainly as if they had marched in with a uniformed army. To understand it really is a conquest. To understand that this is in fact a conquest and you have been conquered. Why don't we reiterate these three types of conquest again? Remember? Three types of conquest. First, and most common, is conquest by war. Second is conquest by religion. Third is economic conquest. Now, the people in the Middle East are pretty religious people, those Muslims. See, those people have been conquered by religion for thousands of years. Well, I say thousands, at least 1,000 or more. They are slaves to their religion and their religious ideologies. Catholicism in South America has done the same thing. Those people are slaves to their religion. Whatever the Pope tells them, they'll do it. Whatever the mullahs tell those Arabs, they'll do it. Now, notice how poverty-stricken those people in South America and in the Middle East are. Just take a look at them. Here's Saudi Arabia, filled with oil. Rich people. The general population's poor. Take a look at the poverty in Iraq and Iran. Oil-rich nations. Poverty-stricken people. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Now take a look at America, an Israelite country. Take a look at the nations, the Israelite nations of Western Europe, you know, France and Denmark and Sweden, Norway. Notice that our government is different, our religion is different, our economics are different, and we have, at least we used to have, relative prosperity. We still have that prosperity. We have an illusion of prosperity today because we actually don't own it. There was a time when we actually owned our property. Today, we have an equitable interest in our property, but notice that religion, economics, makes a big difference in the way that you live and your standard of living. Put another way, if the people of the Middle East, those Muslims out there, if they could practice the economic system of the Bible, which we used to practice in this country, if they could practice the religious system that comes from the Bible, they too would become rich, powerful, and prosperous people as individuals and families. Now, we Americans have given up our religious system, our biblical orientation toward properly, and replaced it now with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And we've changed our religion. We've gone from what used to be nominal Christianity, a form of practice, the practice of the biblical laws, until now we have become humanists, and we're practicing humanist philosophies. And with the change in our religion, and with the change in our economics, we're now poverty-stricken. We're in debt up over our eyeballs. No longer in possession of our property. The bankers have taken it. And of course, that's part and parcel with the plan. America's going into national captivity for the purposes of melding it into this new world order. And of course, the people of America want to do that. The people of America are in favor of the United Nations. The John Birch Society and other groups, other right-wing radical fanatics, as they're termed by the press, have been telling us about the United Nations now during my lifetime since at least the mid-1950s. The John Birch Society and other right-wing groups have been telling you that this is a bad program. Now, had you been paying attention to the Bible, you would have seen four laws, four statutes that tell you do not make covenants and contracts with these foreign and alien gods. You know, such as Exodus 23, 32 and 33, and Exodus 34, 10 through 17, and Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 4, 5. I mean, you know, we've been told over and over. We haven't paid attention. And so there's an inevitable consequence that comes from that. I think Sheldon Emery was ahead of his time. You know, here's a guy back in the 1970s saying, hey, listen, boys and girls, can you see what's going on around you? 30 years later, Americans today cannot see what's going on around them. They don't have a clue as to why it is that mom and dad have to work so hard and still cannot pay their debts. You're going further and further in debt. And it's exactly correct. And as Alan Greenspan creates more and more money, puts more and more money into circulation, you'll have more and more inflation, and you'll have a harder and harder time paying those debts. Seems like it should be easier and easier. But the secret is, they only lend the principal into circulation. They don't lend the interest into circulation for you to pay it off. Now, some of us can pay off our debts. I mean, you could take America today as debt-ridden as it is. And some of us can pay off that debt, debt and interest, get free and clear. That's what we call zero COD, and you can go out and make money. But I don't know what the numbers are going to be. It may be 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000, and you may be that one. But it isn't going to be all Americans. All Americans are enslaved now to the credit debt usury system. And it's impossible for all of those Americans to get out of debt because there's not enough money out there to pay all that debt off. And of course, the guy that's holding the note on your house, the guy that's holding the note on your car, the guy that holds the note on your corporation, when these notes come due, they're going to say, now we want your bodies and your lands. Come over here and sign up, and we'll let you keep your house. We'll let you keep your car. We'll let you keep your job. But we want bond servants. We want that number in your right hand and in your forehead. And you boys and girls will line up to get your mark. Because without it, you can't buy, sell, or trade. Now, maybe 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 of you can escape the trap, but not all Americans are going to escape. They're already in, and they ain't getting out. So the cost to you eventually is going to be everything. By 1920, just 6 years after the Federal Reserve got into operation, they had increased the debt 24 times, $24 billion. From $1 billion to $24 billion. If we signed over to the moneylenders all of America today, we'd owe them two more, plus the interest, and that was in 1977. That was 30 years ago, boys and girls. We couldn't pay it off 30 years ago. Now remember, conquest. We have been economically conquered. Now, all we're talking about now is how many pigs are going to stay out of the enclosure, how many pigs are going to escape. By and large, the pigs of the Okefenokee have all been captured. Now, there may be a few gamblers out there to grasp the truth that periodic withdrawal of money through interest payments will inexorably transfer all of the wealth in the nation to the receiver of the interest. Imagine yourself in a poker or a dice game. You know, if you've ever been into the Ritz or the Blue Room, and you've ever sat down and played cards in a card room, this is the way it works. Everyone has to buy the chips, the medium of exchange, from the banker and from the dealer, who does not risk any chips in the game, but watches the table, and every 15 minutes he comes around and he takes one chip of all of the chips on the table. He just comes around to each player on in the game and takes $1 every 15 minutes. So in short, all of us players in the game buy into the game, and the interest in the game is that $4 an hour. So, you know, you got six guys sitting around the table and we're all playing poker. And every hour, the house takes $24 an hour. Well, you know, let's suppose that all six of us bought into the game for $100 each. So, you know, we went over to the window and we bought $100 worth of chips. And I'm sitting there with my $100 and you're sitting there with your $100. So there's $600 in the game. And then every hour, let's just divide that by 24. That means that in 25 hours, the house is going to have that whole $600. Now, can you people follow that? Now, that's the way your credit debt usury system works in your banking system. Now, it's true that while we're sitting here with $600 on the table and we're playing a hand every 5 minutes, we're playing a hand, there are winners and losers. I mean, you know, $20 moves from my pile over to your pile. Maybe you raked in a big pot and you took $20 from each player on the table. That's $120. Now you got $240 sitting in front of you, and the rest of us have $80 sitting in front of us. But the house comes along and they're taking their $4. Now they took $4 out of your $240 or $220. But they took $4 out of my $80. That leaves me with $76. And that happens every 15 minutes. They're taking a dollar. Every hour, that's $4. At the end of the day, that's the whole $600. By the time we sit here at this table, six players buy in $100 each. At the end of 24 hours, the house has the whole $600. Now, that's the way this game is being played. So as the game goes on, the amount of chips in the possession of each player goes up and down with his luck. However, the total number of chips available to play the game, carry on trade and business, we would say in the economy, is decreasing. Very slowly, but decreasing. The game will get low on chips, and some of the players are going to run out. And if they want to continue to play, then they must go over and buy in and buy more chips from the banker. The banker will then sell or lend them only if the player signs a mortgage, agreeing to give the banker some real property, cars, mortgages on houses and farms and so on. And if he cannot make these periodic payments to pay back all of the chips plus some extra, that's called the interest, the payments must be made on time, whether he wins, that is, whether you make a profit or not. So if you just compared our economy and our businesses with a card game, it works exactly the same way. Now, there's no reason why, you know, six of us can't sit down and have a card game. Let's go over to my house. And we won't charge you anything to buy in. That's the way our Constitution was set up. It doesn't cost anything to buy in. You go out and work, and whatever it is that you create and produce, we deal in gold and silver. The gold miner digs gold. The silver miner digs silver. The lumberjack cuts trees. The woodworker makes boards. The carpenter builds houses. Everybody's working in the society. Everything that we work, create, and produce is ours. And the only thing that keeps you from making or earning more is get your ass out of bed in the morning and go to work. But once you get into the game down at the Ritz, boys and girls, let me tell you, the Ritz is a neat place to play, but when you're playing at the Ritz every 15 minutes, the man comes along and he takes $1. That's $4 an hour. By the time you've played 24 hours at $4 an hour, that's $96 in it. One day of play. So you better be making a lot of money off of these other people. Now, there are businesses that are very profitable. General Motors and Ford used to be very profitable businesses. They're not anymore, but they used to be. And as their debt increases and their interest payments go up, as the game progresses along, it ultimately will wipe out every player in the game. And I don't care whether you're General Motors or Ford or IBM or Bill Gates. Ultimately, if you play in the usury game, you too will be wiped out. You saw that with Enron and Global Crossing and these big, you know, Enron was the eighth largest company in America. Eighth largest. Take Fortune 500. They were number eight. Went upside down. Every business in America is going upside down. The bankers are taking it all. So that's why it's time for a few of you to pick up your chips and get the hell out of the Ritz while you can still walk out with some chips to play with. And then let's go get into a private game. I mean, we can go out here and do business, but we got to do it privately. As long as we're doing public business, we're going to lose our butts. So it's easy to see that no matter how skillfully you're a player in the game, eventually the banker is going to end up with all of the original chips. And except for the very best players, the rest, if they stay in the game long enough, will lose to the banker their homes, their farms, their businesses, and their cars and their watches and their rings and the shirts off of their backs. The longer you stay in the game, including Walmart, the more certain that you're going to lose it all. That's the way that game is played. You go down to Flo's Whorehouse on a regular basis, and you can absolutely guarantee that at some point in time you're going to come down with VD. And that's just the way life is. Those are choices that we make, and those are penalties that we pay. Now, our real-life situation is even worse than with the poker game. You see, in a poker game, nobody is forced to go into debt, and anyone can quit at any time and keep whatever he still has. But out here in the real world, even if we borrow little ourselves from the bankers, your local, your state, and your federal governments are borrowing billions, and they're borrowing it in your name, boys and girls, and then they go out and squander it, and then they confiscate your earnings to pay it back to the bankers, and they pay it back with interest. And if you don't, if you give them any static, they're going to arrest you, throw you in jail for tax evasion. So we're forced to play the game, and none can leave this game except by death. That's why old Ben Franklin said, there's nothing surer than death and taxes. So we pay as long as we live, and our children pay after we die. And if we cannot pay, the same government sends the police to take our property and to give that to the bankers. Then the bankers risk nothing in the game. They just collect their percentage and they win it all. In Las Vegas and at other gambling centers, all games are rigged to pay the owner a percentage, and they rake in millions. The Federal Reserve bankers, their game is also rigged, but it pays off in the billions, and now in the trillions of dollars. In recent years, bankers added real cards to their game. Credit cards. Yeah, real cards, credit cards. And they're promoted as a convenience, and they're a great boon to trade. Actually, they are a very ingenious device by which bankers collect 2 to 5% of every retail sale made in America from the seller, and then 18% interest on average from you, the buyers. Now, you talk about a stacked deck. Credit cards are a stacked deck that a card house or a card shark could only dream of. Well, we're about out of time, boys and girls. I'm going to have to wrap it up right there. We'll be back and we'll take a look at the politics behind this. Why is it that you got the bankers out here raping, robbing, and pillaging you, and you got the Congress and the President of the United States? Let's talk about the President and the politics and the Republicans and the Democrats. What in the hell are the Republicans and the Democrats doing to protect you from this kind of wholesale theft? You know, and when you get right down to it, you know you're doing it to yourself, because, after all, you're the one that's borrowing the money and signing your name. I mean, you're the one that's not practicing the law of God. It's a choice that you make. All right, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School and ask for it. The number 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All right. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.